Good afternoon, everyone, and this is John Campbell welcoming our listeners all over the world to bbsradio.com and Miracle Hour from 12 to 1 Pacific Standard Time. A very warm welcome to you all from beautiful British Columbia. And today I've got an extremely interesting gentleman that has agreed to be my guest. He's going to tell you a little bit about the miracles that he found in his life. And again, this week I'm shifting to talking to more people who are out in the corporate world but doing spiritual work. And I've spoken about this quite a bit in the past 6 to 8 weeks. And we interviewed a guy who was the CEO of a big oil company about the wonderful work they're doing. And I think it's really important. There's such a massive awakening going on everywhere. And sometimes it can be a little bit, I've noticed there can be a little bit of kind of elitism within some areas of spirituality that, kind of frown on anything which smacks of, profit making or corporate work or whatever. And it's good to put another slant out about that. Obviously there's nothing spiritual about anything which is part of the material world, because it's the material world as opposed to spiritual. So money as such is not a spiritual thing. It's just neutral, it's an energy. And there's a lot of people doing a lot of good things, and money is needed to help build hospitals and schools and re-educate people. So I think it's really important to acknowledge that point. It's that what is sometimes what I find very often a difficult balance, is keeping that foot in each world, and it's quite a challenge, especially for some of us that have spent lifetimes in the other field with very little conscious connection to spirit. So it's nice, I think, to kind of intersperse our guests with people who are in the corporate world but really bring spiritual work. And there are many different ways of doing that. So today our guest is going to tell you about himself. I'm going to leave that. He's a very good friend. Him and his wife are friends of Mary and us. And they've got two beautiful girls who we looked after, had the pleasure of looking after for a whole week. And that was a lot of fun, getting in touch with our 4 and 6 year olds ourselves, because I think that's what always happens. So it's a great pleasure to welcome today Colin Sprake. He's CEO of a company called EmpowerNet, and I think he's going to tell you a lot about that and also about his own particular real gift, which is to interpret dream boards. So Colin, welcome to Miracle Hour on BBS Radio. It's great to have you on today.
John, thank you very much, and I welcome all your listeners all around the world as well. It's great to be part of your show, and thank you very much for the invite. It's absolutely my pleasure to come onto the show today and to really talk about who we are as human beings on this planet and what we do in a corporate sense that can assist other human beings in really getting the most out of their lives, not just about how much money you can make and material goods, but really how much you can take out of it in a spiritual sense that makes you remembered for the person you are and what you did for others, as opposed to the person you are and how much money you had and what you could have done for others as well. So we really look on both sides of the spectrum in terms of wealth, but yet the spiritual wealth that people have. So that's what we're all about as EmpowerNet. And really, at the end of the day, it's important for, I suppose, everybody across the globe to look at who they are and what they do. And we've just come back from an awesome time, and as you heard John say, him and Mary looked after our children, our two daughters, who are 6 and 4 years old, for nearly a week, and spent time with them while we were away at our convention down in New Orleans for the company. I'll give you a little bit of history of who I am and where I've come from. I was born and raised, as you can hear by the foreign accent, in South Africa. I came to Canada in 1998, joined a mining company, and in 2000 ended up taking over the mining company and spending a lot of time on the road, typically 8 to 10 months of the year for nearly 6-7 years. And I'd done that extensively in South Africa as well. Got to the top of the mining company, really felt that you know what? It's really lonely at the top. Yes, you get a lot of, you get maybe great compensation, but you don't feel whole as a human being. You don't get that true gift that's out there in terms of really, really having both the wealth in terms of spirituality and maybe wealth in terms of material goods that some people put so much emphasis on. Mm-hmm. And found that, you know what, it was time to move on. It was time to make a change in my life. Did a lot of personal development work with trainers like Tony Robbins, T. Harv Eker, people like that, Blair Singer as well. Went through immense amount of training, personal development, soul searching. And I'll never forget it, standing up in July 2004 at a convention with a personal development group and actually saying, you know what, I'm walking out of my mining business. It's time to give it up. Sorry, John?
No, I'm just saying, that's wow. It's a big one, isn't it?
It sure is. And I walked out on the mining business to say, you know what, the mining business, yes, it puts beautiful gold jewelry on people's fingers. It does awesome, puts diamond around, jewelry on their fingers, diamonds in their ears, what have you for ladies. But you know what? It didn't do too much for me.
Yeah.
It was destroying the jungles in the Amazon. It was destroying the different parts of the world. And I said to myself, after meeting with Robert Allen and Jack Canfield down in Miami, both of them said to me, Colin, let me ask you a question. Is your business enlightening?
Yeah.
I said, what do you mean? Is a business enlightening? I said, well, what does that mean? I said, well, does your business touch the lives of others, and does it have a spiritual and holistic approach to things?
Yeah.
And that was, for me, John, was the most amazing part. And that for me, was the eye-opener that got me out of the mining industry and across into what I do today.
But that's tremendous, Colin. But you, that was you talking to the likes of Jack Canfield and Robert Allen, etc. Can you explain? Because what's interesting that you were the head of this company, and you started to get all this feeling of loneliness, which I can so relate to. You know, that's what happened to me. But was there any way? Because what I find is normally pain that propels people to make changes. And was there anything significant you can remember that where you actually did things start to fall apart in the business, or did there start to be conflicts, or what was it that really propelled you to start dwelling on the question which we all ask, who am I and why am I here?
Well, John, the way I look at it, the pain. I mean, if you really get down to the pain, a lot of people will say, well, how did you do your evaluation? I looked at the pain that I was going through, and I looked at it and I said, well, I get up every morning, and for the last 18 months of being with the mining company, I go out of bed and I was often in a different city somewhere in the world, and I'd say, why am I getting up today?
Yeah.
And the pain for me was that I didn't enjoy getting out of bed, because, yes, I was going out to do mining. I flew into remote areas of Peru and in the Amazon jungle, and I saw the devastation, and I said, this is not me. This is not what I want to be left. This is not my legacy that I want to be left on this planet. I want people to be able to say, what do we do to rebuild those forests? What do we do to touch those people's lives and not just go and completely take advantage of them?
Yeah.
So the pain for me was completely, number one, really not giving back to people, but at the same time, my true pain was not being at home with my family.
Okay, it's really interesting you said that, because my next question I was going to say was, were you married at this time? Did you have family? And I guess that was the answer, right? That you felt a disconnect there, was it?
Well, John, I'll give you an amazing statistic, which for me is really sad, is that for the first 4 years of my daughter's life, my six-year-old, I only saw her 6 months.
In 4 years.
In 4 years.
Wow.
And that's the eye opener that most people go, holy moly, I'm not surprised you changed. But yet, there's so many people that are out there doing this every day. Yes, it's great to be a CEO of a major corporation earning millions and millions of dollars, but what does it do for you other than put money in the bank? You can buy whatever you want to buy, but you cannot buy that time at home with your kids and with your family.
Yeah, that's so true, Colin. I remember the guy who said he doesn't, I think it was a priest, he said he hasn't been at too many dying people's bedsides, and the guy said, I wish I'd spent more hours at the office,
Very much so. I agree with that fully.
So that was really what propelled you to think of it in a different way. And did you then decide to start doing personal development work while you were still operating in the mine company?
I actually did. I started doing a lot of personal development work while I was in the mining company, and just felt, to be really honest, that I had a calling towards going out and helping others.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what, for me, was the amazing thing. There's just so many people out there that their lives are so, their lives are the way they are today, and they keep on getting, because I really hugely believe in laws of attraction and The Secret, and they keep on getting more of the misery and the sadness and the lack of money and what have you, because that's what they put out there.
Yeah.
But some of them, most of them aren't aware of it.
No, so that's right.
So if you try to make them aware, 80% of change is just knowing, just being aware of what you're putting out there.
Yeah. And of course, the confusing thing is, it's not what you're consciously putting out; it's what you're unconsciously putting out there. It's what's below the iceberg, you know, below the water and the iceberg. That's the thing, and what you're holding down there, you're actually still unconsciously focusing on and bringing it into your life.
Very much so, and I think those icebergs run so deep under the water that a lot of people don't really realize, you know, all the perceptions, emotions, culture, upbringing, things from the past that come to the top of that iceberg affect us every day in the way we see things, but we really don't know why they, you know, where they've come from until we are made aware of it.
Yeah. So, and I think a lot of people are getting that now. There's immense change happening in the world, Colin, isn't there? And I think especially with us guys, you know, there's such a big need for us guys to come together on a different level. You know, we have been so socio conditioned, you know, to be competitive and all that kind of stuff, and to not get in touch with the feeling side of us. But it's wonderful to see more and more men on these groups and these spiritual gatherings and that, because when I first came into this awakening 10 years ago, you know, I was nearly invariably the only male in any of this stuff, or maybe there were two amongst, you know, 10, 12, 14, 15, 20 ladies, you know. And now that balance is shifting, because I think the same thing. I think so many guys are starting to ask the question, well, you know, was this my only purpose, and have I got another side to me? And it's wonderful to see, you know, these men's groups going, you know, coming together and sharing this stuff.
I agree fully, and I always say, John, at the end of the day, what do you want people to stand up at the altar and say when you pass away?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And if you live with that thought in your mind all the time, what was my purpose? And truly, what's my why? Why am I on this planet? What am I meant to be achieving here?
Yeah.
Very little of them will say, well, I was meant to be achieving a $10 million in income salary.
No, that's it, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It comes back to, what is your purpose? What is your true being on this planet? And I always come back and I say, write down your why. We just did this at our convention in New Orleans. Write down your why and let me understand what is so powerful for you on this planet.
Yeah, that is such a good question, isn't it? Because then that really gets people to dig deep and focus, you know, like obviously my and Mary's why is, you know, we're out to change things or to help educate around children, you know, and everyone's got a different why and they're all okay, but it's about focusing on finding out what is your deepest why, isn't it?
Very, very much so. And I mean, even I'll explain something to you that we did at our convention, that we had a lot of aha moments with the ladies and a lot of amazing things happen. We did what we call the boat game. And the boat game was really, in a simple terms, was you're on this massive cruise line and you're going up on a beautiful vacation, let's say off to Alaska, and you're far out at sea, and all of a sudden the boat starts taking on water. We put the ladies into groups and we said to them, okay, here's the deal. You were five or six in a group, only one of you can make it onto the lifeboat. You have 30 seconds each, and we'll go around the group. All you have to do is 30 seconds to convince the rest of the group why you should be on that lifeboat. But only one of you can make it. The rest of you will perish.
Oh,
and that was, for many people, was, what is my why? Why am I on this planet? What am I doing? Why am I here? And how do I convince these people? Of course, we had the extreme. Some people said, well, I'm the best saleswoman, so therefore I'll convince them and say anything to make sure I'm on the boat.
Yeah.
And some other people have said, I don't know why should I be on that lifeboat?
Yeah.
You know, I'm an older lady. There's some younger people in my group. They can be on the lifeboat. And I just said to them, quite obviously, you don't value your life enough.
Yeah.
Or you're completely contented with what you've that you've achieved on this planet, that you are happy to pass away immediately. I don't believe any of you are in that. Any of the listeners or anyone might be in that arena in terms of truly believing they've achieved what they want to achieve in terms of a spiritual realm, in terms of touching the lives of others.
That's right. Yeah. And it's so shockingly alarming, isn't it, when sometimes we see how little we think of ourselves and how little we think we're worthy. And I think that's the part which first has to be dealt with on this journey, isn't it?
Very much so. I mean, I think you cannot do anything in terms of all the personal development we do in the company. You really can't do much for others until you've really examined them in the mirror yourself.
Yeah. It's like that, who was it, Socrates, that line he said, the unexamined life is not worth living. And I think that's what he was talking about, You have to examine it, so... Yeah, so going back then to what happened when you made the change then. So you were still operating the mining company and you were going to all this development, personal development stuff, and that. Tell me some of the things you did, and then what propelled you to actually leave, and how did you do that?
Well, John, and you know me pretty well personally. I'm pretty much a decision maker. So I went out and we did lots. I did quite a lot of personal development training during the course of 2003. And then mid-2004, like I said, went to a seminar, stood up at a seminar, voiced my intentions, because I knew if you voice them aloud and you feel the vibration in your body, that you will act out on them. And announced at the seminar that within the next month I would resign and walk out on the mining company. And resigned, walked out 4 months later, and really didn't know where to go with what I wanted to do. I knew I had a better purpose on the planet, though.
Yeah.
And that's when I came across our company we have today, which is not really personal development training, yet it involves immense number of ladies in the business, or human beings, you want to put it in a nutshell. It's not really to be sexist in any way. It involves so many different people. And when it involves people, you need personal development, because that's half of getting people motivated to be able to do what they want to do on the planet, is understanding themselves first.
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah, who was it said on one of those things that your business will only grow to the extent that you're growing?
Well, I would add to that too as well, John. I always say the universe will only give you what you are capable of accepting.
Yeah.
You know, if there's enough space to accept more, the universe will give it to you. But if there's not enough space, you will keep on getting the same and you'll wonder why.
Yeah.
Until you go in there and do that self-reflection and understand why you're getting a limited amount of whatever you're looking for.
Yeah. So when you got up and made that declaration, because that's what it is, isn't it? It's a declaration, and the universe gets it in vibration, and I'm sure most of our listeners are all in tune with that kind of concept. You then walked away, and then how did you come across the pole, the whole concept?
Okay, now I think I should maybe just give a little bit of clarification for the listeners. We run a very different business, but if you understand how the business works and the power behind it and the immense personal development tool that we have, you'll really understand our complete reason for going into the business. So we run EmpowerNet, we do home pole dancing parties, and we run a completely natural skincare line. EmpowerNet's slogan is mind, body, fun. The mind being the pole, because these pole dancing has always been known in the strip clubs to be seedy, disgusting, what have you. It's a huge form of fitness and what have you in North America. It's gone worldwide. EmpowerNet's already in 14 different countries. The people have adopted it, but the amazing part about the pole is we use it as a personal development tool. Because
right.
So many people have a stigma around this pole, and when they touch it, something changes inside them. And it's pretty funny, until you see it, John, and your listeners actually experience it, people just think that, wow, you know, it's just a stripper pole. It's not a stripper pole. We call it the empowerment pole, empowered by the pole.
Right.
When ladies go out and experience an evening with their friends, we do it as a party plan. very similar to Pampered Chef or Tupperware or any of the other kind of party plan companies that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
But the ladies go out to do a pole dancing party, and at the same party, with going through Empowering It with a Mind Body Fun, the mind is a pole, body is our skincare line, and of course, what do most people want more of in their lives currently is fun.
Yeah. Yeah, so joy. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big one of the biggest. That's truly what we're marketing. We're marketing fun because so many people are working 3, 4, 5 jobs just to try and stay afloat.
That's it. That's,
you know, and we just said, let's get out there and empower. And that's how we got into the pole. Number one is the pole was something that we just said, so many people want to try this. You'll always look at it and say, I know somebody that will definitely jump on the pole and have fun together with their friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I know somebody that will be terrified to do it or
yeah.
mortified. The funny part is, often when you approach those people, they switch around.
Yeah.
One you think would never do it, absolutely loves it, feels completely empowered. And we use this. The pole is really a metaphor in lots of ways, as well as a continual tool that they use in their business, because it makes them feel so great.
Mm.
And the pole for me, it's touched my life personally. And I don't know if I've ever shared this story with you, that even if with my wife and my kids, my wife, she went to, when I first got this idea, we actually started doing some real research into, does the pole do anything outside of just being a fun party evening? And we started doing a bunch of research with the Michigan State University and got some reports from them on how the psychological aspect of the pole, because of the stigma that it carries.
Right.
And we started to laugh about it and say, well, the pole's only a vertical ballet bar.
Yeah.
You know, if you did ballet as a kid, you've just turned this thing vertical. Why does it have such a stigma?
Yeah.
And ladies, we related that back to their lives.
Yeah.
We said to them, well, it took so much effort to touch this pole, but once you touched it, was it that bad?
Yeah.
And they go, no, it wasn't.
Yeah.
So I said, what about other things you can relate this to directly in your personal life?
Yeah.
Are there certain things that you're staying away from, certain things you're avoiding, certain things that even looking at your own self in the mirror that you're avoiding, yet if you do it, you'll find it so beautiful and you'll get so many amazing transformations, amazing things from it,
yeah.
just by using the pole as an analogy and a metaphor.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, I mean, I've never experienced it. I don't know if guys do this, but I can imagine because, you know, I think... you know, historically, et cetera, there's been these, you know, the women have been put down and been socialized, and men have to, as well to a great extent. But, I mean, you know, through the religious bodies and all that kind of thing, government. And there is a need for women to know that they're more than just wives and mothers and that, you know, there's so much more in them. You know, we love them, don't we?
Exactly.
We really do. And I admire them. I've got such respect for them. And I think the pole... I was just thinking about it. It really symbolizes being straight, you know, being supportive. You know, it's supportive, it's symmetrical, it's balanced. So there's a lot of qualities that the pole has which can be related to human qualities, internal qualities.
Very much so. And, you know, I think even with the pole, we've gone through so many different things. I mean, even as we developed the pole parties and we looked at the whole thing of understanding what they do for women, it is completely, I can't even say affected, I think it's infected my life. Because
right.
my wife, you know, Gabby, she's, you know, my absolute precious gem of my life, we got married in, just on 10 years ago, we had our two kids, and the woman I married that I loved so much just disappeared. Like she was now this lady with two children, raising these two children, still loved her immensely, but just said, where's she gone?
Yeah.
And I think so many men experience this, that all of a sudden their wives disappear because no man truly understands the maternal bond between mother and child.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden she went to two pole dancing parties, and which we know pretty funny about it, we virtually dragged her there kicking and screaming, saying, please, I'm trying to start this new business, you've got to go just because you're my spouse.
Yeah.
She said, well, I'll go and I'll do it for you. After the second party, John, she came home, she said, I'm going out to buy new underwear, I need to feel sexy, I want matching underwear, I want things that make me feel great. I said, you went to a pole dancing party, what happened?
Yeah.
She said, I now realize I need to give to me because so many women for sure out there, and you can't generalize completely, give so much of themselves to others, to their kids, to their husband, to their friends, but lots of time forget to give to themselves.
That's it. And you know what happens sometimes there is, well, it's about to thine own self be true, you know, because when that happens, it has to bring with it resentment if it's not what they're wanting to do. I mean, there are people that are genuinely, you know, absolutely fulfilled in doing just that, and that's great. But I think there's a lot of other people that it's not exactly what they want, but they feel that they have to because that's society's way of looking at them, you know?
For sure. I agree with that.
And they're the ones who, you know, when you're doing anything you don't really want to do, there's got to be a resentment. And if there's a resentment, who suffers? They suffer, but also everybody around suffers.
Very much. I mean, we look at really as the lady as, you know, especially in a family situation, as completely the hub of the entire family.
Yeah.
You know, and if the mom, mother is happy and satisfied with where she's at in life, you see how it affects the children and really at the end of the day, how it affects the husband as well.
Yeah.
And the whole family unit.
Yeah, the family unit is such a, it's a dynamic which is carried out into the outside world, you know, I mean, it's so crucial, and this is what we're so passionate about, is re-educating about what makes healthy family units, because it's the bedrock of society, and, you know, there's a lot of work to be done on that, and a lot of different reasons for that, but, and then this program of yours is just another completely unusual in a way, but way that can be done. So when you found this, Colin, who first brought this concept out?
Well, it was actually brought out by an actress in Southern California by the name of Sheila Kelly, who was on L.A. Law, which was one of the big TV series, I don't know, maybe in the 1980s.
Okay.
And she brought it out in the virtually the late 1990s. She actually took the poles out of the CD places and put them into a studio and started pole dancing for fitness in Southern California.
Right.
And got going with it, and that's where we based it on, and we said, well, you know what, she's really targeting the lady that has great self-confidence, or a lady that just has whatever, all the different criteria that she would happily go to a studio and go dance, and, you know, and they do it for fitness and they do it for stretching and toning and what have you, but certain ladies were happy to go there and do that, where we looked at it and said, that's a very, very small percentage of the market. If we can go out there and really let ladies, no matter who they are, you know, try the pole, have fun with it, and feel the change that this pole can do in their lives, why can't we take the pole to them and put it in their living rooms?
Right.
And that's what we started doing. We are the company, so you can either go to a studio or you can come to us, and we will then come to your home, put a pole up where you can dance and have fun with your friends in the comfort of your own living room, and nobody has to know about it other than your friends that were there that evening.
Yeah.
But the thing is, for us, it's such a big percentage of people will never go to a studio, and we wanted as many ladies to have the pole impact them, because one of our key statements in the company is there is a magic about the pole.
Yeah.
You know, and some people say, yes, are you on the sexuality side? No, we aren't. We really focus on sensuality.
Yeah.
You know, on ladies being sensual beings. And yes, we've ever done a party for a group of men, because that's, our goal is not to go that route. We have full participation at the parties. The ladies dance, they have fun, they laugh, they cheer each other on. It's all done in a very, very supportive environment, to the extent some ladies are cheered on that would never do this kind of thing, suddenly get cheered on and they suddenly blossom.
Yeah.
And they come out of their shell completely. We get emails just weekly from ladies saying, you guys have touched my life. This poll changed me.
That's
your listeners
amazing.
Might be thinking, well, that's outrageous, but it has.
That's amazing. And is it just over in Canada and the U.S. at the moment, Colin, or?
We have it in Canada, the U.S., South Africa, Australia, New Zealand. Believe it or not, we have people doing it in Dubai as well. We are in Finland, U.K.
Oh, you're in the U.K. as well, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is really worldwide already, yeah?
Very much so, and we've only been doing it since virtually January 2005.
Wow. So that means you have agents there. Because the other thing which, you know, I think needs a lot of clarification is this multi-level marketing business concept, you know, because I first came across multi-level marketing about, must have been 35 years ago, you know, and I went to a presentation by a company called Herbalife, which a lot of people would have heard of, and I went with my accountant, unfortunately, because they're not always, you know, my accountant was not the great entrepreneurial guy. He's great with doing nuts and bolts, but when I saw this concept, I immediately saw the beauty of it, you know, where if it's properly run, I saw that it was something where everyone would benefit when they helped other people get what they want, which is the whole purpose of connection and the spiritual life, if you like, isn't it, you know? And that was 35 years ago, and it's got more and more popular now. And I read an article somewhere recently that about 85% of the world's products are now and services are sold on a multi-level marketing situation. But, of course, there's still a percentage of people that misunderstand the concept and they think it's pyramid selling and all the rest of it. And I think that there's such a lot of good work out there. And I know that you watched that DVD recently, Brilliant Compensation, which really, I feel, explains the purity of this, you know, this method of marketing and how it is truly dependent on what you put in and how much you help other people. Because, you know, the guy actually says, doesn't he, that a pyramid is your traditional corporate setup where the guys at the top earn all the money and the ones at the bottom get very little and get made redundant when things go wrong. Whereas in true multi-level marketing, you know, you have frequent situations where people way down the ladder make more than people higher up because they're helping other people more.
Exactly.
And so it is an amazing concept, and you decided to adopt that for your parties, huh?
Well, John, exactly. And I mean, I go back to really the real reason why we looked at network marketing or multi-level marketing in the first place was that our goal in the company is we have so many different goals, but there's a couple of them that number one is one of our overall goals is to reduce the divorce rate in North America. And another one of our goals is all kids should be raised by their parents and not raised by caregivers, because I think that definitely does bring up different kinds of children, and no disrespect to caregivers and you know, nursery schools and daycares and what have you, but if kids are raised by their parents, I believe, and I've seen it happen in so many cases, that the kids are more whole in society just because they've got those attributes and those different input from either both parents or just one parent, because unfortunately we do live in a really sad society of high divorce rates. But the big thing for me, the reason why I went network marketing, was to say, well, how do we create a business model that truly gives back to the people that are part of it? You know, we can go out and say, let's go get a job and go work for somebody 8 hours a day, you get home and you spend a few hours with your kids, you put them to bed, and you do that 5 days a week, and some people do it 6 days a week. And I said, well, that sounds great if we're going to the franchising route, but that's not what we're about. We're about giving people the lives they want, at the same time giving them the time with their kids. So overall, we as a company can achieve our, if you want to call it, holistic goals of being able to be at home with their children, being able to give to their children as much as they can, and work the business when it's good for them.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, I've got a job and my kids need to fit in around it, we have the opposite. We have kids where the job fits in around them.
Yeah.
You know, and I reverse it in our company, and all our ladies in our main office, we don't have anyone on a job or employee contract. We call them BODJs, BOJs. And BOJ contracts for us with all the ladies in our home office stands for beyond one's job.
Oh, that's a great, I didn't know, that's a great terminology there, Colin.
Yeah, so we have lots of fun with it. So we actually reverse it to say, when you join our company at corporate office, you're joining us on a BODJ contract. And people go, what is, you know, that sounds crazy. And we say, well, you know what, our whole company is about really giving and working together as a team, but also we're very spiritually based. We have Our whole goal is to, yes, for sure, we're in a corporate environment. The company needs to pay back its shareholders, what have you, as well. But at the same time, how do we do that by touching the lives of people? So I put it the other way around. If we can touch as many lives as possible, give people the lives they want, our shareholders will never look anywhere else, but yet those people are getting touched in such a special way.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. I mean, that is a true example of how you can match the business world with the spiritual element. And I really get what you're saying about the need for children to be raised by their parents rather than caregivers. But the only thing I'd say there is the emphasis there is on healthy parents, because here we come back to our conversation earlier about the need for personal development, because there are so many wounded people there, you know, who've got in relationships and had children themselves, and you know, they haven't gone back and examined what happened to them and changed it, and they just replicate what was done to them, you know. And so that's I think that's the important thing, is that, you know, children have got to be raised by healthy people, and that's where I feel that I encourage everyone working with kids to do their own healing, because I know that once I started, I was able to see how poorly I had parented, you know, my kids, and I was able to make changes. And but I wasn't able to do that until I went and had a look at it, you know. So I think I really believe in that. And when we can get that kind of environment, and because there's a desperate need, kids are crying out, especially these new kids now. And that's why these businesses that, the type of business you're creating and other multi-level, that's also something I see for the kids, isn't it? Do you not agree that we've got to somehow get to the kids, the teenagers in high school, and say, hey, you know, there is another way other than going out and getting a job from 8 till 6 and hardly ever seeing your parents and being nearly in debt most of your life. And I think that's a way to educate them in that field as well, don't you?
Very much so, John. And actually, we've just put a, just interesting, I don't think you would even know of this as yet. I've actually just put a proposal into my daughter's school so that I can actually go in there and start training on personal development from grade 6 upwards. So the school has opened it with welcoming arms and said, well, it's so nice that one of the parents actually wants to come in once a week. I'll probably spend a couple of hours with them every single week, but actually really getting personal development training through to them to really look at where they are, where they're at, where they've come from, and what is their why from a young age.
That is amazing, Carl. That is wonderful news, because, yeah, well, you know how Mary and I feel about, you know, getting into the schools and affecting the way that children are treated and educated. And you know, you're absolutely right. You've got to be with the teachers first, because until they're on the same page, it makes it very difficult. So that's amazing. So when's that going to start?
That we did it just in the final just discussions, what have you, with the school, because you know, the school sort of, well, how do we pay you for it? I don't want any payment for it. I just want to give these kids the life that they, you know, an analysis of their life and the way they should look at things as they move forward. So we're hoping that it's going to actually start probably around the 1st of November.
Wow, and that's you going to be working with the teachers or the kids?
With both.
With both, right.
Oh, that's both, you know, and really going through, probably doing a presentation to start off with and doing some training initially on a weekend with the teachers that are going to be involved.
Yeah.
And then thereafter to work with the kids so the teachers understand how to be a support function during the training that we give, because if they're not the right support function and the kids go to them for understanding of, you know, their past or their situation or their why, and the teachers don't know what their why is or how to understand it, it's not going to go anywhere. So we're definitely going to work with the teachers first.
Oh, that's fabulous, Colin. That's really, really wonderful. That's where it's got to start. You know, if we want to change the world, we've got to start with education, because, you know, they spend so many hours of their waking life in those establishments. That's what people sometimes forget, I think, you know.
Very much so. And these people have such an influence on your children as well, you know, especially if they, when you get influenced by the people you spend the most time with. And if mom and dad are only getting home from work at 6 o'clock in the evening, and the, you know, the kids are at school from 9 until 3, and with caregivers from 3 until 6, and then mom and dad get home, mom and dad only maybe have 4 or 5 hours with them, and yeah, that's it per day.
That's it. And it's about Oh, that's wonderful. I love that idea. I love getting, and you know, it's such needed work. And Colin, I'm conscious that we're coming up to the last sort of quarter hour here already. It's just flown by today. But what I'd like you to do, could you tell us something about the dream boards? That's something I'd like you to share with our listeners.
Sure, John, with pleasure. It's one of the most amazing things, and I can tell all your listeners that are listening today that, and you know, they might listen to the archives later, is that it's so amazing. This going to dream boards. I started using dream boards probably, believe it or not, only 3 years ago, and got into it. Yeah, saw dream boards as something important, but wasn't really didn't put a lot of importance on them, and over the last 18 months or so, they've become an integral part of the way I run my business. And the way that when the ladies join our business and we go to convention, we always do dream boards. In fact, we do something pretty unique in the office. Every single person, before they join the company at a corporate level, does a dream board before they join us. And people think, well, that's pretty unusual to ask a prospective employee to do a dream board. Well, number one, if they don't want to do it, they're pretty much not on the same wavelength we would like them to be on when they come and they join us at the company.
Right, that's a good criteria, yeah. So it's kind of weeding out right at the beginning.
Very much so, and some people are a little bit, well, that sounds a little bit unusual, but I'll do one anyway. And we end up getting them to do their dream board, and once they've done their dream board, I don't know where I got the gift from, I've never been taught it. We actually do full interpretation of the dream boards down to understanding who they are, what they need in their life, what they are so attached to in their life, what they want more of in their life, how busy they are in their life. There are so many things I can tell you from a dream board that some people go to me, Colin, where did you get this from? I want to be able to learn how to do it. I don't know where I got it from. To me, it's just divine. It's a gift that I was given at birth, it's only come around and really come to fruition in the last, you know, 18 months or so. But we can sit down, I can tell you, from somebody's dream board in our office, especially, and I'll go back to the ladies in the company that are part of the company as well, but in our corporate office, I can look at a dream board, number one, tell the core value of the person, number two, tell you how neat and tidy they are, number three, what drives them, is it money that drives them, is it family that drives them, what drives that person, just from, and that's just the basics of what I can tell from a dream board.
Wow. And can you describe what is a dream board? Is it different from a vision board? I mean, I'm very conversant with vision boards, but is a dream board a similar type of thing, or what is it?
John, virtually exactly the same thing. You know, your dream board, vision board, people call them different things. For me, I call it a dream board. I just love the term dream rather than vision. Vision sounds very corporate for me. I love the word dream. And really, at the end of the day, it's just dream boards can be absolutely anything you'd like them to be. It's typically, you know, a piece of standard card, whatever color you would like it to be, maybe 50 centimeters by, you know, 60 or 70 centimeters. And then people put whatever they like on that dream board or that vision board in terms of what they would like to do. I'm sure most of your listeners have heard of one. If they haven't got one, I'd highly recommend doing one because it's so powerful in manifesting what you want in your life.
Right, right. And so what, they cut stuff out of, do they do it in a one-hit session, or do they do it over a period of time, or is it totally up to them?
Totally up to them. Most of the time I always say you're cutting things out of magazines, you're writing notes on it, you're doing whatever you'd like to have on it from your perspective. You can go and get scrapbooking materials from the local scrap shop. You can get little foam pieces you stick on, whatever really is whatever you would like to add to it to make your board special to you so that it resonates from your heart. It's not something you just cut out and say, yep, I really want that. That's coming from your head. It's really coming from your heart where you see a picture and you can just feel it from your chest that it resonates with you.
Right.
You cut that picture out, you stick it on, and you know, you can put a note below it, or you just know in your heart why you put that picture there.
Right. Right. Okay. And then they put all those together. And so if somebody was coming to work in your company, you would request that in the first application?
I'd first look at the app, look at the where they're coming from, you know, in terms of course, resume or what have you. But then in the second interview, I'd say, here's the thing. You're not going to have an interview. All you're going to do is do a dream board.
Wow.
I normally give them 2 hours, an hour, 2 hours to do a dream board. And after they've done that dream board, number one, I can tell very quickly, John, this is the power of dream boards. And I mean, this is just on the real, on the surface, if you look at them. Number one, if in 2 hours they've only done half the dream board or they cut out all their pictures and nothing stuck on their dream board, you can know maybe this person, number one, is very detail-oriented and they want everything to be perfect, so they're cutting out everything first.
Right.
If somebody's finished their dream board, pretty much you know it's somebody that is task-oriented.
Right.
You know, you give them a two-hour stint, finish your dream board. Some people don't finish it in 2 hours.
Right.
You know, so you look at it from that perspective, and then where everything is on the dream board is very, very powerful because you'll put it there from your subconscious.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're putting things on your dream board, you're sticking them in different places, but a lot of that comes from your experiences, what's happened in your life, and where you put them is important.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'll give you a very good example. I was just down at our convention, and we do this at convention with our organization as well, so that the people who are their uplines or what have you really know how to treat the person in their downline. Are they money-focused? Are they relationship-focused? Are they spiritually aligned? Whatever it might be. And we were with one lady, and she came up to me and said, Colin, please, can you interpret my dream board? And I said to her, she gave me her dream board, put it in front of me, and I said, wow. I look at your dream board, and all it tells me is that you are craving to love self.
To love self.
To love self.
Yeah, yeah.
And she burst out crying. And she said, Colin, how the hell do you know that? Excuse the expression. How do you know that from a dream board? I said, your key picture in the middle is a naked lady with her arm across her chest.
Yeah.
Of course, you can't see anything, but I said, that arm symbolizes to me, and it's right in the center of your dream board, what you are craving, what you are so looking that you are so wanting in your life.
Yeah.
And she burst out crying. She said, Colin, and I said, you know what, the stuff around it, you'll never get that until you love yourself.
Yeah, yeah, that's so true, Colin. It's what we were talking about earlier. It really is. And it's the biggest lesson, I think, you know, and it's a tough one, especially when we've been raised to think that's selfish, and you know, but it is true. You see people that really have self-esteem, which is not about egotism or anything like that. It's just a deep sense of being lovable and capable. That's what I think self-esteem is. That they're so much better with other people in their lives.
Very much so, John. Yeah, and really at the end of the day, the dream boards, I mean, we've had an amazing time really interpreting dream boards. And for me now, a dream board / vision board is a key criteria for me hiring somebody in the business, as well as knowing how to work with them. You know,
yeah.
It's no use going out to somebody who in their center of their dream board is a couple walking on a beach. You try and motivate them with money, you will never motivate them.
No.
Yet you look at that and you say, well, that's in the center of the board for a reason.
Yeah.
You know,
so it's not a case of when you see something like that, that's it, you wipe that person, that's not they're not appropriate to work in a business. It's more telling you about where you could and how you could utilize them so that they maximize their dreams. Is that right? Or?
So they maximize their dreams and their full potential.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because at the end of the day, you know, somebody could say, well, I'm really great at sales. And you say, great, I can see from your dream board, yes, I can see exactly the kind of person you are, and I know that you'd be good in a sales function.
Yeah.
But the one thing I know for you is, it doesn't matter how much I pay you, if I can reward you with trips away with your family, that would be more significant to you.
Yeah.
Lots of people will say, maybe your listeners as well, saying, but surely, Colin, I can just buy the trip if I get the monetary reward. Remember one thing, a lot of people don't see things that way.
That's it.
If they can see themselves on a
beach
in Hawaii, that's where they want to be. They don't say, oh, well, I want to get the $10,000, go and buy the tickets and go and book my own trip to Hawaii.
No.
I want to just be there on the beach. That's what my goal is.
Yeah. That is so good, Colin, but also, isn't that a wonderful way for businesses generally to start adopting? So in other words,
instead, when you're employing somebody, or when you've, I don't even like the word employment, there's something that doesn't taste good about that, you know, to me.
Pretty much, I'm the same as you.
The same as bosses, I can't stand those words, you know.
Exactly.
But wouldn't it be great to sort of have the person and be saying, now, what can we do to bring this person to their full potential if they came to work with us? Instead of, what can they do to bring the company up, you know?
John, so much so. And what I find is so powerful as well is you do a dream board when they during their job interview, and or the BODGE interview, as we like to call it. So during their BODGE interview, they do the dream board. You give them the dream. You ask them to do a dream board a year into their time with the company.
Oh, right. Okay. After they've been with you for a year.
With you for a year, and then you give them and you ask them, let's redo it. Let's have a. And we do this typically once a year, sometimes every 6 months, depending on how everyone's feeling in the office. We'll take Friday afternoon off and just sit and do dream boards.
That is so cool.
You know, and say, lady, let's redo all our dream boards, because one thing is my business is very different. 90%, or actually I think it's even higher, probably 96% of all our suppliers are home-based moms.
Home-based moms?
Home-based moms. So even the products we supply through the network marketing company come through. We're not just about, hey, how can we empower the woman in our company? How can we empower our suppliers at the same time and find people that want to grow a home-based business as well, but we can buy from them to empower those women as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that is the power. When you get everybody, it's more of my dreams is to show companies about having a purpose. Like this is what you're talking about, you know. If the company have a higher purpose, which prioritizes the need for profit, and everybody is aligned to that purpose, whether that be to creating new schools or doing whatever, and you get everybody passionate about that. And it might take a little time, you know, people might leave, new people will come. But once you get the energy of your suppliers, your people at work in the business, your customers, everybody aligned to that common goal, that common purpose, wow, there is no stopping. That business is guaranteed to succeed.
I agree fully, John. I think if you focus on what your true purpose is on this planet and do it through a vehicle, I mean, to me, the business is just a vehicle. In order to get there, the success and the rewards you will receive from it will be uncountable.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Well, it's amazing work. And what's your next plan, Colin, to expand? I mean, you're in all these countries. Do you have conventions over in those other countries, or are they only in the States at the moment?
Only in the States at the moment. So we just had our annual one down in New Orleans this year. Our next one's in Denver, Colorado next year. And we invite everybody from all over the world to come to it. The big thing for us, I think, as you know, to answer your question and where we're going with the business, our biggest thing now is to, number one, keep building the self-development part of the business. We have our training division of EmpowerNet is called Make Your Mark, because I believe everyone should make their mark on the planet in some way or form. And we actually come up in February next year, we're launching Enlightened Home-Based Businesses as one of our training seminars.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so how to come from a home-based business with, you know, a real spiritual intent to look at your whole home-based business is, does it touch the lives of others? And we've already been approached by other network marketing companies who heard that we're looking at bringing this on board to say they can't or cannot wait, because they will send some of their people to us to hear about how to run an enlightened home-based business. Because it's not just, to me, it's not about the money at all. It's about how many lives you touch on the way to receiving the rewards that you want.
That's
for me is more rewarding.
That's wonderful. Well, Colin, it's been an absolute pleasure having you as our guest today. And you know, I really thrill at what's happening within the business world, and I want to acknowledge you for what you're doing, and for Gabby for her support and what she's doing within the thing, and your two lovely daughters, and wish you every success, and may you touch many millions of lives to come, and thanks for giving up your time today to be with us.
John, thank you very much. I sincerely appreciate it, and if you know, John, would it be okay if I gave an email address if anyone wants
to... Please do. Just quickly give an email address and a website address. That would be great, Colin.
Okay. If you want to get hold of us, we're at wantmorefun.com, WANTMOREFUN.com. If you'd love to send me a picture of your dream board, I'd happily give you some interpretation, send it back to you. If you'd love to do that, to send it as a picture attachment to Colin S, C-O-L-I-N-S, at EmpowerNet Canada, EmpowerNet Canada.com, and I'll happily do interpretations for you as well.
That's brilliant. Thank you, Colin. That's fantastic. And I'll put that up on the website as well. I'll get that information for you. And listeners, do take advantage of that, because I know Colin's got a great gift. So thank you all for being with us today, and we wish you a wonderful week. Thank you. God bless. Bye-bye.